All right, I'll start anyway. So I'm going to present a very related paper, which is great because that means that I can go quickly on the introduction. And this is joint work with Morten Olsen. Perfect, thank you. All right, so you know, basically, as Pascual said, we know that a lot of technological progress involves the automation of existing tasks. So for instance, this is how you used to produce cars in the 20s. And that's how you produce cars today, right? So all of these guys, all of these tasks have essentially disappeared from the labor market. But at the same time, it's not the only form of technological progress that exists. You also get new tasks that get invented. So for instance, you know, these jobs here definitely did not exist in the 1920s, okay? Actually, if you look a bit more carefully at the picture, you will see that the computers look a little weird. They're very big. So presumably these jobs may still not exist and may already not exist anymore. Okay? So basically, we seem to live in a world where technology gives new products, new services, new tasks, and then automates them, so and then takes them away, right? So basically, and you know, this process has been largely absent from most theoretical work, which has actually focused on technical change that is factor augmenting. So either we augment labor or maybe we try to augment capital, but we don't really have this idea of automation tasks before. So our goal here in this paper is to provide a framework which is similarly to Asimuglu and Restrepo, where we can study together automation and horizontal innovation happening at the same time. Okay? And the core question that's going to be addressed in this framework is, well, what are the incentives that that innovators are going to face? So what we're going to see is that that higher low-skill wages are going to lead to more automation. And the key difference with the previous paper is that we won't have balanced growth. Okay? That means that over time, we're going to have more and more automation. We don't have balanced growth. And so what we are interested in is really studying the transitional dynamics of an economy. And so what we're going to see is that in our economy, the economy is going to go through three phases. In a first phase, we're going to have stable labor income inequality and stable factor share. But in the second phase, automation accelerates, in which case you'll start seeing an increase in the skill premium and a drop in the labor share. And low-skilled workers may lose not only in relative terms, but also in absolute terms. So you can have low-skilled wages going down. And then we'll talk about the third phase, where things stabilize. So we have a stable labor share. Low-skilled workers gain in absolute terms, but they still lose permanently in relative terms. Okay? So the skill premium keeps rising forever. Okay? So, and basically, you know, this second phase here seems to be quite similar to what we've observed, let's say, at least in the last 50 years. Right? In the last 50 years, we see a permanent increase in the skill premium, low-skilled wages really stagnating, and maybe more recently, actually, the labor share declining. Okay, so I will skip on this. So first I'm going to present the model with exogenous innovation, so trying to understand how changes in automation and horizontal innovation are going to affect the income distribution. Then I'll endogenize technical change, then we do some quantitative exercise. And then, maybe that's a little risky, I actually want to present another paper at the end. So the conclusion will be another paper. Okay? So we're going to start with an economy that kind of looks similar to the previous one. So you have an infinite horizon economy. We're going to have a fixed mass to start of high-skilled workers, H, and a fixed mass of low-skilled workers, L. Preferences are traditional preferences. Rho here is the time preference rate. Theta is the inverse elasticity of interchangeable substitution. And we're going to have a final good, which is produced with a CS production function with an elasticity of substitution sigma, and that's a CS of different products, different tasks. Okay, and the range of product here is N. And this range is going to increase. Okay, so similar to the previous paper, but we don't eliminate previous tasks here. Okay, so we keep increasing the range. And so basically the first source of growth here is going to be an expanding variety model in some sense, so similar to Roman 1990. Now, each of these tasks, each of these intermediate inputs are produced monopolistically, okay? So they're going to, and since we face isoelastic demand, that's going to mean that there's going to be a constant markup. Now, how they produce each of the input? Well, they're going to be produced with high-skill labor H, low-skill labor L, and possibly machines X. Okay, so the production function is here. So basically, you're going to have two types of firms. For some firms, this alpha here is zero. So if the alpha is zero, you just have a Cobb-Douglas production function between high-skill labor and low-skill labor. But for some other firms, the alpha is equal to one, which means that now you allow for substitutions between the low-skill labor and the machines X here. And the phi tilde here is just a productivity parameter. So beta here is a factor share of this aggregate of low-skill and machines, and epsilon is the elasticity of substitution between machines and low-skill workers. In the previous paper, that was infinite. It can still be infinite here as well, but more generally, it needs to be greater than one, and actually greater than this number, so that when a firm automates, that actually reduces demand for labor within the firm. Okay, so within the firm, automation is labor saving. Okay, for simplicity, we're going to assume here that machines depreciate immediately, and they produce one for one with the final good, so they're not a capital stock, but you can generalize that without much changes. So at the end of the day, you're going to have that your technology is determined by two things: the number of goods, the number of inputs, which is this n here, and the share of these inputs that are automated. Okay? So that the aggregate production function can be written in this way. It looks a little complicated, but it's not that complicated. Where g here is a share of automated products, and 1 minus g here is the products that are non-automated. Here you have all of the resources going to automated firms. Here you have all of the resources going to the non-automated firms. Okay? Now, to understand the differences, maybe that would be quite relevant, to understand the difference with the previous paper. So what Daron and Pascual changed relative to our paper is that they added the gamma here. Okay, you remember this gamma? That was the increase in labor productivity. Okay? Essentially, if here we had the same thing with just a gamma in front of the L, you would not get exactly balanced growth, but the model would look very, very similar to what they have. Okay? Now, if you, instead of putting the gamma only in front of the L, you were to put the gamma in front of everybody, for instance, so that the gamma would be a TFP productivity parameter, then it would look very similar to what I'm going to tell you. And if you do something which is a little bit in between, so you put the gamma in front of the L, and you put a gamma with an exponent that's less than one in front of the machine, then that would be a model that's a little bit in between our two models, but that does not feature balanced growth paths. Okay, so that's for you to kind of see how the two papers, what is the key difference in assumption between the two papers. Okay, so let's just think about how a factor demand determines. So from a static point of view, there are two equations that really determine wages. One is this equation that corresponds to the relative factor demand. How much low-skill labor versus high-skill labor do I demand in my economy? Okay, so it's given by this expression. So if all firms were non-automated, G here would be equal to zero. So this big fraction here would just be equal to one. So you would just get a constant ratio between the factor share to low-skill labor and the factor share to high-skill labor. Okay, that would be just a Cobb-Douglas word. As soon as you start automating, then the skill premium, so the ratio of the high-skill wage V to the low-skill wage W, starts increasing. Okay, it increases for two reasons. One is that within automated firms, I'm replacing low-skill labor by machines. And the second reason is that actually the automated firms have a competitive advantage relative to the non-automated firms. Since low-skill labor gets a lot of the income from the non-automated firms, when the non-automated firms get a smaller and smaller share of the market, then the low-skill workers get a smaller share of the economy as a whole. Okay, so there's the two reasons here. And the second condition that gives the equilibrium is this equation here that just tells you that just is a productivity condition that just comes from the price normalization. That's kind of the cost of producing one unit of final good depends on factor prices, the technology, so the share parameters for automated and non-automated firms, and here the number of products that acts as a TFP parameter, actually. Okay, so to understand this a little better, you can actually represent the equilibrium in this graph, where you have high-skill wages here and low-skill wages there. Okay? So the first condition, this one, the relative factor demand condition, well, it's this curve. So when g is equal to 0, it's this curve that's very close to a straight line. Okay? When g is different from 0, it starts bending like this. The second condition, this productivity condition, that's going to be a curve that looks like this. Okay? So within this framework, I can think of both forms of technological change. If I increase the number of products, I don't change directly this factor reward equation, but I push out the iso-cost curve, right? So that means that I push out this productivity condition like this. So that's going to increase both low-skill and high-skill wages. If I automate, I also push out this term, this productivity condition. It becomes easier to, you know, you reduce cost in the economy. That's a scale effect. But at the same time, you move out this, what I denote here, skill premium condition, which is a thing. So you get more and more of the reward going to high-skill labor. Okay? So if you increase G, you're going to, both curves, this curve move up, this curve move left. That's going to increase the high-skill wage. That's going to increase the skill premium. And it will actually have an ambiguous impact on low-skill wages. Okay? Because the movement here benefits low-skill workers, and this movement here hurts them. Okay? This is just this proposition, essentially. Now, this is, you know, once we understand, now we understand how technology affect wages, so the next step is to understand how is technology determined. Okay, so that's what we do now. We try to endogenize innovation. So in the model, automations result from an innovation, and so the innovation technology is the following. We're going to assume that to automate, I need to hire some high-skill workers that do R&D. Okay? And so if a firm hire HTA, high-skill workers specifically in order to automate, then at every instant, it's going to have a Poisson rate of success in automating, which is given by this expression here. Okay, so the kappa here is just that there is some concavity, and eta here is the productivity of the automation technology. Okay? Now, this depends on the number of products, so that you have knowledge spillovers actually from the level of, you know, technology in the economy. The more technology you have in the economy, the easier it is actually to automate. Okay, and this you can micro from this, but it's actually important because since you have more and more products, if you did not have this externality, you would have fewer workers available for each product. Okay, but that's not difficult to micro fund anyway. So then what's going to be the incentive to automate? Well, if I denote VTA, the value of an automated firm, and VTN, the value of a non-automated firm, then a firm is going to hire workers in order to automate up to the point where the marginal cost of a worker, its high-skill wage, is going to be equal to the marginal benefit. What's the marginal benefit? Well, I increase marginally the personal rate of success, and if I automate, my firm's value increase by this amount. Okay? So as a result, that means that, you know, the amount, the normalized amount of resources that are devoted to automation depends on this ratio here, which is the difference in value between an automated firm and a non-automated firm divided by the high-skill wage normalized here by the number of product. Okay, and how this thing changes over time is going to be crucial to understand the transitional dynamics of the economy. Okay, so that's the first form of automation, of innovation, automation. The second one is very classic, that's just the creation of the new product. Okay, so how does this work? Well, we're going to assume that outside entrepreneurs can hire high-skill workers in order to create new product with this very simple linear technology. Okay, so basically you're going to keep creating new product up until the point where the value of creating a new product is going to be equal to its cost. So you get that free entry condition here, so that when there is creation of new product, this inequality here becomes equal. Okay. So yes. How to understand then the equilibrium? Well, the equilibrium is just going to be such that high-skilled workers are going to be indifferent between the three activities. They can go into production, they can go into creating this new product here, or they can go into working in order to automate existing products. Okay? And so the equilibrium is determined by equalizing the return to high-skilled workers across these three activities. Now, the key thing here is that the economy is not going to feature a balanced growth path. Okay? So, which means that we'll have to get interested to you know, look much more carefully at what is this transitional dynamics here. So there is no balanced growth path. However, under a plausible parameter condition, there is a unique saddle pass stable asymptotic steady state where the share of automated products is between 0 and 1. So that's what I'm going to show you now. We're going to look at such an economy that is going to converge towards this asymptotic steady state. Since it's numerical simulation, I'm going to just throw in some parameters. They are reasonable. But basically, none of what I say is going to really depend on this choice of parameters, except for one thing, which is I want to look at an economy which is initially not very developed. That is, the initial number of products is very, very low. Okay, so this N0 here, which is the initial number of products, is going to be very low. Okay? So how does this look? It looks like this. So this is, you know, for the first 100 years. So what do we have? So in blue here, you have the automation incentives. So by automation incentive, I mean this fraction here. So which is the ratio of the marginal benefit from automating relative to the marginal cost of automating. Well, you can see that since the level of the economy is low, wages are low, low-skilled wages are low, and therefore the incentive to automate is going to be low. If the incentive to automate is low, the number of automated products, the share of automated product, which is in green here, is basically zero. If you have no automated product, then that means that you live in a boring cup-of-glass economy. So high-skilled wages, low-skilled wages, and GDP, everybody grows at the same rate. And this is here the total labor share, and the total low-skilled labor share are constant as well. Okay? Essentially, we have a curve that looks like this, a skill premium condition that looks like this, and we're moving along the productivity condition as we increase N. Now, can this last? Well, not really. So let's understand this a little better. So basically, this is the evolution of the share of automated products. Okay, so this is the share of automated products, the law of motion is given by this expression. So it increases when I automate existing products. It decreases when I create new products because the new products come non-automated. Okay? As I said, automation rate is basically depends on this ratio here. Now, let's think a little bit more about this. Well, the difference in the value of an automated firm and the value of a non-automated firm, essentially that's going to be related to the discounted flow of profits of an automated firm versus a non-automated firm. Okay, so with some discounting, this guy here is basically going to evolve like the difference of profits between an automated firm and a non-automated firm. Okay? Now here, what do I have? I have wage, high-skill wage divided by the number of products. Well, the high-skill wage are constant share of output, okay? Because they enter cup the glass with everything. The profits are also a constant share of output because I have a constant markup. So the average profit and the high-skill wage divided by the number of product are basically going to be proportional to each other, okay? Which means that this ratio is essentially going to evolve like the difference in profits between automated and non-automated firm divided by the average profits that firm make. Okay? Now, if this difference is very small, so, you know, this difference is directly related to the wage of low-skilled workers, if this difference is very small, then this number is going to be very low. But as low-skilled wages increase, then this number becomes higher and higher, and you get a bigger and bigger incentive to automate. Okay? And so that's what you get here in the second phase. So automation incentive increase here. As a result, the share of automated products increase, which lead to a decline in the low-skilled wage, a growth rate, an increase in the high skill wage growth rate, a rise in the skill premium, and a decline in the total labor share. Okay? So basically, this is when we have both things moving, both the G increase and both the N increase. So this is kind of akin to what we've seen in the last 15 years. Now, this can go on forever either because when GT is different from zero, so we start having automated products, and this number here is going to reach a plateau, right? So the PTM becomes very small, but basically that means that this is going to reach kind of a constant, which means that the number of resources devoted to automation is going to reach a constant, which means that here this automation rate of non-automated products reaches a constant, which means that the share of automated product is going to stabilize somewhere below one, since the new products that come in non-automated. Okay, that's when we reach this third phase here, where the share of automated products keeps rising, but it asymptotes below 100%. As a result, we still have that high-skill wages, this situation, so this curve does not move anymore, but the productivity condition keeps pushing up, which means that both wages must increase. However, the high-skill wage must increase at a much higher rate than the low-skill wage. Okay? And the labor share, the total labor share stabilizes because essentially now it's just high-skill workers. So low-skill workers have positive wage, but as a share of GDP, it's very, very small. Okay, you can actually, You can actually, solve for the asymptotic steady state under even more general condition, and you get that the growth rate of low-skill wage is related to the growth rate of GDP or the growth rate of high-skill wage with this fraction here. So basically, what does that mean? That means that when the different tasks are more substitute, then low-skill wage growth rate is even more depreciate relative to the growth rate of the economy. That makes a lot of sense. That means that you have more substitution possibility on overall in the economy between machines and low-skill workers. The second thing which is interesting is the role of the beta here. So beta plays a role because when you have a non-automated economy, beta is actually the factor share of low-skill workers. So a high beta will mean initially a small skill premium. Okay? But since machines replace the low-skill workers, that's also eventually going to be a measure of the competitive advantage of the automated firm relative to the non-automated firm. So that in the long run, a high beta is going to hurt inequality in the sense that it's going to increase the gap between the two growth rates. Okay, let me skip this. So one thing that I haven't told you, in the previous graph, low-skill wages were low, growth rate was lower than high-skill wage growth rate, but you can actually get it to get even negative. So this is with different parameters, a small modification, you get that low-skill wage actually decline during the second phase. Okay. Let me skip this, and just because this is a bit linked to what Pascual talked about just before. So one thing which is interesting in this framework is that the asymptotic growth rate of GDP, but therefore also the asymptotic growth rate of low-skill wage, increase in the productivity of automation. Okay, so the eta parameter that measures the productivity of the automation technology is going to have a positive impact on the growth rate of the number of product. And since it has a positive impact on the growth rate of the number of product, it's going to have a positive impact on the growth rate of low-skill wages. Which means that if you compare two economies, one with a high eta and one with a low eta, then the economy with a high eta is going to undertake automation sooner. So that's going to reduce low-skill wage relative to the other economy initially. But in the long run, that's going to hurt the low-skill workers. Okay? You can think about it as a low eta corresponding to a robot tax, which can be popular sometimes. And in this case, a robot tax will help low-skill workers in the short run, but in the long run, it actually hurts them. Okay. So I have 10 minutes. So very briefly, we can calibrate the model by adding an endogenous. So here we just add an endogenous skill supply. We calibrate the model to try to reproduce, essentially the evolution of these things. So the skill premium in the US, so that's in the data, the skill premium in the US is in red here. That's how we can do calibrate our model, that's our fit. That's the skill ratio, so this is in the US, that's our fit here. Of course, this is average GDP, growth rate of GDP per capita. Of course, we cannot capture fluctuation, but we can calibrate the model to reproduce the same average growth rate. And this is a increase of the stock of private equipment in order to match it with the increase of the machines in our economy, which we can also track very, very clearly, very, very easily. Now, this version of the model, if you calibrate it, the one thing that you miss is that this is a decline in the labor share of in the data. This is a decline in the labor share in our model. So clearly, our model would suggest that the labor share should have declined much more than it has, but you can tweak the model in different ways to actually make this better fit. Okay? And if you believe the calibration, this is what we will predict. So that essentially we are here in around here. So we will be around the end of the second phase, beginning of the third phase. We will predict that the share of automated product will keep increasing for a little bit, with an increase in the skill premium that series that keeps going on. Okay, and the decline in the labor share that keeps going on for much longer in the future. Okay? So just to conclude, what we found is, you know, we built an a model with the first model with horizontal innovation and automation together. And what we find is that the economy undertakes a structural break. In the first phase, we have stable inequality, stable factor share. In the second phase, the skill premium increase, low skill wage stagnate. What's important is that this second phase can last for a very, very, very long time, actually. It could last hundreds of years. And in the third phase, low-skill workers actually benefit, but they lose relatively to workers. And you can also talk about wage polarization. Now, before, you know, I'm going to spend the last few minutes on an ongoing project, which is joint with Morten, but also Antoine de Chelleprêtre. And so the goal here is that we actually want to look more directly at the link between low-skill wages, how changing low-skill wages predict automation. Okay, so the few slides at the end of Pasquale were about how automation affects low-skill wages. This is a reverse relationship. Okay? Now, this is not obvious how to do that because, you know, basically you have wages that are determined at the country level, so it's very hard to have identification. Okay? So here is our strategy. So we're going to look at 20 countries between 1981 and 2010, and we're going to look at patterns, so triadic patterns, and we're going to identify triadic patterns that should represent automation based on the technological code. And what we're going to do is that we're going to exploit firm-level variation exposure to different markets. So this is very close to what I did in another paper with Antoine and Philippe and co-authors on actually innovation between clean and dirty cars. So the idea is that we're going to look at firms, and you know, basically the firms that we have here are essentially equipment producers. Okay, and they can do automation, and they can do innovation, and these innovations are going to be automation. But these equipment producers, they sell everywhere in the world. Okay? And some equipment producers sell a lot in Germany, and some equipment producers sell a lot in the US. Now, if you have an increase, a fast increase in low-skill wages in Germany, then that's going to affect these equipment producers that sell a lot to Germany more than one that sells to mostly to the US. Okay, so what we do is that for each firm, we compute a firm I's customer-specific low-skill wage. Okay, by doing the following, so the log of the firm-specific low-skill wage, or firm's customer-specific low-skill wage, is an average of the log of the country wages, the different countries, these 20 countries that we have here, where the weight here is this omega. And this weight, well, we have essentially all the automation patterns in the world, right? So we're not going to have market share data for all of the firms in the world that sell equipment. So how to proxy for this? Where we look pre-sample, where did the firms patent? Okay? The idea is that when a firm patent, it has to patent for a specific country. So it's only going to patent in a country if it sells to that country. So the geographic distribution of where firms want to patent is a proxy for where do they sell. Okay, so we fix that pre-sample. So these are going to be this weight omega IC. And essentially, we're going to be able to have firm fixed effects. And anything that's going to identify how firms react in terms of automation is how are they differently affected by trends across countries. Okay? And these are the type of regressions that we get. So this is, so the dependent variable is a number of, well, the log of the number of triadic patterns that are automation patterns. Here, we look just at the effect of low-skill wage, and you get an elasticity of 2. Okay? You can start adding some controls, so you can try to control, for instance, by labor productivity. We add controls for the business cycle, so this is because business cycle affects automation generally, and in particular, there is this paper by Jamovich and Sue that suggests that the business cycle could affect certain forms of innovation more than others. So, and basically, so, you know, the elasticity becomes higher. Then in our previous paper, we learned actually that controlling for the stock of knowledge by the firm itself is important. So that's what we're doing here. We add the stock of automation patents of the firm, and here's the stock of all the patents of the firm. And essentially, our final regression, to some extent, with all the controls is this one, with an elasticity of 1.6. Okay? We can decompose this across...
There is path dependence.
Yeah, so there is path dependence, right? You can see the path dependence here. So more innovative firms patent more, and more innovating firms in automation do more automation innovation. Okay, so this has these two coefficients here. And you have also more automation basically in recession. This is kind of this GDP gap coefficient here.
So what's automation patents?
Yes, I'm going to get it here. So we look at the different IPC codes. So automation patents are going to be 2, 3, 4, and 5. So one is all our automation. And we say that a patent is in automation if it belongs to either this guy, and this guy. So robotics are the patents that are linked to robotics. So this is actually the effect that the least well identified. It's because there are actually there are relatively fewer of this, and presumably it's also more recent. These correspond to all firms in the equipment sector, so all technologies that relate to the equipment sector, combined with a technological code that indicates algorithm. So this is this column. These are patents that correspond to machine tools. This corresponds to handling. This is just a control, right? A placebo effect. So clearly, if we had something that's positive here, it would be bad because we don't think that pharmaceutical patents should react to the skill wage. Okay. One thing that's interesting is to go a little bit try playing a little bit with the type of control that you do. So this is our initial regression. So what you can do, instead of looking at labor productivity, look at low skill wage and high skill wage. So what's interesting is that the higher is the level of high skill wage, the less you want to do automation patents. Okay, so that indicates that there is some complementarity between skill and machines. So if high skill wages are very, very high, I don't really want to introduce machines that are going to use high skill workers.
So that's kind of the spirit of Ohanian, Crusell.
Yes. Yes, exactly, right? That's kind of that would be a result of Ohanian, Crusell, and so on. This is also interesting. So let's look at low skill wage relative to labor productivity and just low skill wage. So this is kind of a measure of, how low skill wages how high low skill wages are relative to the productivity in the economy on average. Okay? So it's kind of a deviation to some extent relative to trend. And this is the pure level of low skill wage. Okay? You get that both are actually positive. So it's not just when low skill wages grow faster than average productivity that you do more automation, but the level of low skill wages itself actually also predicts more automation. Okay? And this is still ongoing progress, so at the moment I will just stop here.